My Trade, A Personal History of British Journalism, written and read by Andrew Marr. You cannot hope to bribe or twist, thank God, the British journalist, but seeing what the man will do unbribed, there's no occasion to. Humbert Wolfe, poet. The British journalist is not exactly popular. National newspaper circulation is falling fast, and some of the best-known papers have lost the most in percentage terms. The Financial Times at one end of the market, Daily Mirror at the other. Editors have tried all sorts of tricks to raise sales. Broadsheets have adopted the strident fusing of opinion and reporting that the tabloids pioneered. There's been aggressive price-cutting, all manner of special offers, even changing the size of newspapers. As the first broadsheet to cut down to tabloid format, The Independent did win a good sales increase. But overall, the tricks didn't work. What's been going wrong? It isn't lack of talent. The Trade employs many of the best writers in Britain. Papers as distinct as The Guardian and Daily Mail are brilliantly designed, far better than they were 30 years ago. And above all, we live in a news-driven world. From Baghdad to Westminster, from cannibal trials in Germany to the sex lives of the British royals, from global warming to Africa's AIDS pandemic, there's not exactly a shortage of stories. We still buy and read far more papers than any other European country, and we still have a national press that is infinitely more varied and lively than that of America. But today's sales figures are grim. It makes you wonder if something is wrong with what today's journalists actually do, day in, day out. There's a great unfolding argument about the ethics, working habits, and produce of British reporters. For BBC employees, it's been a particularly painful time because of the anger-mottled drama that followed the Iraq War, in which a government-employed scientist, David Kelly, killed himself after being exposed as the source of a story on the Today programme that had sent Downing Street into a fury. The inquiry by Lord Hutton into those events was tough on the processes and behaviour of the BBC, which had been regarded by most people as the source of the most trusted journalism about. During a dreadful few hours, it cost the corporation both its chairman, Gavin Davis, and its popular director-general, Greg Dyke. Many journalists felt that Lord Hutton had been harsh and that a single mistake on a single programme had been used to condemn the practices of a whole profession. "But that's exactly how you treat us every day of the week," reply politicians. The Hutton process shone a light on practices that many journalists find hard to defend. Was it all right to rely on a single source when making a serious allegation? As a Westminster journalist, I do it all the time. How full and accurate are one's notes at the time supposed to be? Well, many reporters do not have reliable shorthand or any shorthand. Is it fair to use anonymous quotes from people who won't identify themselves to attack others? Probably not, but without this, half the news in newspapers would vaporise. When journalists are broadcasting, should we write down all the important bits beforehand rather than simply speaking off the cuff? It would be safer, but such reporting sounds so wooden you might find yourself forced to switch off. Britain has a tradition of raucous press freedom, and for good reasons. Historically, it's often been the derided and marginal-seeming figures who were right, and the smug majority which turned out to be wrong. Whether it was Claude Coburn's anti-appeasement news sheet of the 1930s, The Week, which saw the real diplomatic story of Nazi advance far more clearly than The Times, or Andrew Morton's much-derided inside story of the disastrous marriage of Charles and Diana, which proved those experts fools, the British have good reason to thank irresponsible journalism. Whisper it softly, but there are still those in the darker corners of Whitehall and Westminster who feel that even Andrew Gilligan was far more right than he was wrong. What are my qualifications for discussing British journalism? This is decidedly not a memoir, but I have used episodes in my career as jumping-off points for larger arguments. I've been a general reporter, a sub-editor, a parliamentary reporter, a political journalist, a radio presenter, a broadsheet and a tabloid columnist, a hilariously inexperienced newspaper editor, an author, a maker of TV documentary series, and am now, as the BBC's political editor, a television reporter. I've not been a sports reporter or written about dogs and fashion